40 years ago tomorrow, a young team of amateur U.S. hockey players took on Goliath and won. The setting? Lake Placid, New York. The Giant? A Soviet Union team that had won four straight Olympic gold medals. On February 22, 1980, with 10 minutes left in a semifinal matchup played in the shadow of the Cold War, Winthrop native Mike Ruzioni hammered a loose puck past the Soviet goaltender and into the back of the net, giving Team USA its first lead of the game. The
U.S. team is depending a little bit too much now on Jim Craig. He's making too many good saves.
Ruzioni! Mike Ruzioni! Now we've got Bedlam.
As the final minutes, then seconds, melted away, play-by-play announcer Al Michaels delivered a call for the ages.
11 seconds. You've got 10 seconds. The countdown going on right now. Morrow, up to Schultz. 5 seconds left in the game.
It's over.
You believe in miracles? Yes!
Unbelievable.
The miracle on ice, as the upset victory became known, is one of the greatest moments in American sports, especially since Team USA went on to win a gold medal. We caught up with team captain Mike Ruzioni in his Boston University office, and I just had to ask, Mike, do you believe in miracles?
I was talking to Al Michaels yesterday, and Al and I have played golf over the years together, and every time we play and we're walking up a fairway, somebody yells, "Hey, Mike, hey, Al, do you believe in miracles?" And Al and I just look at each other and just shake our head. So, yes, I do.
Well, so do we. And, boy, what a golf group to be in on. I'm sure that people would kill to join with that pairing. Mike, could you just take us back to that day in Lake Placid 40 years ago? I mean, what do you remember? I imagine it's just like yesterday.
Yeah, I deal with it quite a bit. So, you know, I think it's just a very proud moment for me and my teammates to know that we were part of a moment that we didn't know touched the lives of so many people in such a great way. So I think, you know, you kind of take great pride looking back on not only was it a great event for us, but a great event for our country.
The game itself, of course, was compelling, but there was so much buildup and anticipation to it. Did you guys feel that, or were you able to sort of insulate yourselves as a team and just focus on the hockey?
We focused on the hockey game. We didn't know what was going on around us. We weren't allowed to talk to the media, so we didn't know what was happening other than what was going on in Lake Placid and maybe at home with our family and friends. So that was a good thing because we were shocked by it when we got out into the country and realized that this thing was pretty huge. So, you know, we were in a little village in Lake Placid and pretty much kept to ourselves. And the task at hand was to play hockey. It had nothing to do, you know, over the years I've always heard, you know, the political climate that was never discussed, never talked about. To us, it was a hockey game.
You've come to appreciate that, though, I'm sure, over the years, right, as you've read and understood the significance.
I think the people that I've met over the years, the stories that they've had to tell me, you know, I've had people come up to me and just start crying because the game meant so much to them for whatever particular reason that might be. So, you take great pride knowing that, you know, you touched so many people's lives in a positive way. And, you know, after it was over, we realized that the country was looking for something to feel good about, and it happened to be us.
For folks who've forgotten or perhaps even weren't alive, remind them just what you were up against. I mean, this Soviet team was a colossus at the time.
Yeah, they were considered the best team in the world. You know, I don't know, they never played Edmonton Oilers, although they did beat most and almost all the NHL teams they played, and then they beat NHL All-Stars by a score of 6-0. So, you know, they were professionals. We were college kids. Our average, we the youngest Olympic team we'd ever put on the ice. We were by far the youngest Olympic team in the tournament. And, you know, it was an incredible upset. It was a great victory. But, you know, for us, like I said, it was a hockey game, but for the country it was something greater.
It was a national and international story on a lot of levels. It was also a real Boston story, right? I mean, there was a lot of Boston boys on that team.
Yeah, well, Boston University boys. The four of us were for BU, Jim Craig, Jack O'Callaghan, and Dave Silk. And, you know, predominantly the most, 90% of the team was Minnesota kids. But we always say the most important ones were the four guys from BU.
Well, of course. I mean, you and Jim Craig alone, right? I mean, those are the two that people, I think, remember most fondly. Do you and Jim keep up? Or we're always wonder, I think, when these anniversaries come around, do you and the boys ever see each other?
Yeah, we're going to be together this weekend. We're excited about that. We're coming back to BU on the 29th of February. They're bringing me, Jim, Jack, and Dave back. We haven't been back since 1980. So there's going to be a big ceremony honoring us at the BU-BC game. So that'll be fun, especially because it's BC. And if you win, it's a double victory. We get together every once in a while. We go to Lake Placid. We have a fantasy camp that we've done the last 5 years. A lot of us are avid golfers. We see each other once in a while. Minnesota kids obviously see each other a lot. I don't see Jimmy. On occasion, I might see Dave Silk. I see Jack O'Callaghan probably more than anybody on the team.
So tell us a little bit about the book, The Making of a Miracle. It's hard in some ways, I imagine, to find new ways to tell this story 40 years on.
Well, the book isn't a lot about the Olympics. A little bit it's about the Olympics, but it's about my life. It's about how I ended up at Boston University, which is a strange occurrence in itself. How I ended up on the Olympic team, which is a strange occurrence in itself. I wrote the book for one reason, and one reason only. I have five grandkids now, and I want my grandkids to know that Papa's life wasn't just 2 weeks in Lake Placid. And I talk about growing up in Winthrop, my family, how I grew up, the environment I grew up in, my parents, my cousins, my aunts, my uncles are very much a part of my life. And like I said, you know, 10 or 15 years from now, if I'm long gone, I want my grandkids to know that you know, Papa didn't score just one goal or play in, you know, one game. He experienced a lot of things in his life.
You mentioned being such a young team at the time, having the college players against the professional players from the Soviet Union. This is a debate that comes up seemingly every 4 years when the Olympics come around. Should NHL players represent their countries in the Olympics, or should it just be amateurs? Where do you come down on that?
Well, first of all, there'll never be amateurs, especially from the European countries. They'll all be professionals. I would love to see the NHL players go back into the Olympic Games. I think the skill level is so good. From all countries now. And the U.S. goes into the tournament now as one of the favorites. We've got some great young players that play in the National Hockey League. And, you know, when it first started, I was curious, would they compete against each other? Would they go hard against each other? Because it's during the season. And you don't want to lose one of your best players, you know, to an injury. But when I saw them compete the first time, I went, wow, they're after each other. They're going to battle. Because when you represent your country, it's different. You know, you're not playing for the Bruins anymore. You're not playing for the Rangers. You're playing for your country. And I think players understand that. And they put aside their differences and they go out and they compete for their country because that's the ultimate honor.
Well, we've seen stars like Alex Ovechkin say, whether the NHL lets me go or not, I'm going because I want to play for my country, right? This means a lot to some of these
players. Really does. And I just read recently Connor McDavid and Jack Eichel talked about the fact that Austin Matthews, they want to go. And I hope they go. You know, if they don't go, then we'll send the best team that we can and I'll still root for them. You know, we're not like the Miami Dolphins. We want to see a gold medal, you know, in this country for men's hockey. It'd be a great tribute to the program and the players themselves.
What do you think about today's game, the pro game in particular? I mean, some of the really big, devastating hits that we saw when you were playing, we see fewer of those, largely because the rules have been changed
right.
In that way. Do you like that? Do you think it should be more rough and tumble?
No, it's still physical. But, you know, the fourth line now is fourth line of skilled players. You know, I mean, every team that's competing for a Stanley Cup, they're trying to find a good balanced fourth line that can go out there and play. And, you know, the fighter on your roster is not there unless he can flat out play. I just think the skill level is off the charts. They're bigger, they're faster, they're stronger. Today's players are better. And having said that, they're better and they're coming from all parts of the country now. You know, before they were from Massachusetts, Minnesota, Michigan. You know, now it's all over the world, but yeah. Even the United States. You know, some of the best players in Florida, Texas, Arizona, California. And you never had players from that area. So I think that sport has grown, and it's great to see it.
So there's the game itself, and there's also the way that it's taught and the way that it's coached, and I'm curious about that. I mean, I don't know Herb Brooks personally, your right. Olympic coach. My sense of him is that he was a pretty tough coach. And a lot of us were just reading the story in the Sunday Globe about the Assabet Valley girls hockey team and those coaches being suspended for a couple of years by Mass Hockey for what amounts to verbal abuse of their
right.
players, or what we think of verbal abuse now, but that perhaps was allowed 20, 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
I didn't read the article. I hope to try to look at it because a good friend of mine has coached over at Assabet. It's a different era. You can't coach the way the coaches coached in the 70s and 80s. You can still yell at them, but you got to be careful how you do it. And that's the society we live in. Maybe it's the millennials. They just can't handle people getting in their face. But when I played, you heard from it, and Jack Parker would be in your face. But
Jack Parker,
over
the legendary BU
yes,
coach, of course.
But
yeah.
Jack changed over the years a little. You know, he softened up a little because he saw that today's players are different. But in my years, yeah, coaches would grab you. You know, my football coach in high school would grab you by the face mask and twist it. And that's how it was. And you deal with it. You know, if I went home and told my dad, then I'd get a beating from him. So I think coaches have to be a little more careful of what they say and how they say it. And that's the big challenge. It's a fine line. It's not easy being a coach today. And like I said, I haven't read the article. I'm curious what it has to say.
Do you like to see players, especially young players in their teens, advocating for themselves more in that way? Or do you think that on some level they need to toughen up a little bit?
I'm old school, so I think you got to toughen up a little. Now, you know, physical abuse, that's one thing. Verbal abuse, it depends on how it is. You know, if there's some language, then that's a little different story. But, you know, coaches got to bring a point across once in a while, and sometimes it's going to be harsh, and sometimes it's going to be demanding, and sometimes it's going to be frank and to the point. Hopefully players can understand that. And one thing about Herb Brooks, he'd criticize you every time you screwed up. And, hey, I know it. I made a mistake. And yell at me the way you want, and hopefully I won't make that mistake again. Now maybe you have to put your arm around the player and talk to him or her and say, look, you made a mistake. Now let's not do this again. So, I'm old school guy, so you're talking to the wrong person when it comes to, you know, coaching in the 2020s or whatever year we're in right now.
So you mentioned earlier trying to sort of block out the whole geopolitical dynamic when you were playing that game in 1980, but you've come to appreciate it all these years later. And I just wonder, are you surprised that 40 years on, we're sort of still in this sort of somewhat, I mean, we're not in a literal Cold War, but certainly things are tense between the United States and what's now Russia, of course.
That's the world. That's the world that we live in. It's unfortunate, and hopefully we can get through all this battle that we're going on right now, and everybody kind of come together, you know. I'm not a political person. I don't get involved in politics, although I do know, and I played golf with President Trump last year, and I've known him a long time. And, you know, we I think we're going to be invited to the White House, the 80 Olympic team, and it would be a great honor to go to the White House, not necessarily supporting the president, but supporting what the White House is. And I don't know, maybe the next Olympic Games, something will happen. It'll kind of rally the troops again.
As you know, that's a tough decision that a lot of teams have made in recent years. If they win a championship and they're invited to the White House, do they go? We've seen this be an issue for our local teams because we fortunately win so often. What do you think about that? I mean, should folks just respect the office and go, or should they take a stand?
I'm old school again. I think you respect the office. You know, I remember in 1980, we went to the White House, and a lot of people weren't happy with Jimmy Carter, especially the Olympians, because he boycotted the Summer Games. So a lot of people were really disappointed. Some, you know, said they weren't going to go because of that reason. But we all went. Out of respect for the office, not so much sometimes the person that's in it, but what the White House stands for.
So these anniversaries always kind of an occasion to say, you know, where are they now? What are they up to now? I think for a lot of our listeners, Mike Ruzzioni is forever that 20-something-year-old kid from Winthrop who scored the winning goal in the Olympics. What do you want folks to know about Mike Ruzzioni today? What are you up to?
I'm still Mike Ruzzioni from Winthrop. I'm just 65 and not 25. So, you know, I've been working here at Boston University for I don't know how many years, maybe 27, 28 years, although if you added up all the days I've been here, probably been here five. I've got a great position here. I love being a director of special outreach. My role here is almost an ambassadorship role here. I meet with students sometimes. I meet with recruits. I meet with alumni. When I'm out in Vegas this weekend, I'm going to do a BU event in Vegas on Sunday morning. It's going to be brunch with me, and we've got about 20, 25 alums that are going to come to it. So things like that, it's like I said, it's almost an ambassadorship role, and I love it. And I still do a lot of motivational speaking. I travel quite a bit around the country doing some talks. So got five grandkids now, so life's moving on in a different direction. So all is good. All is fun.
Mike Ruzzioni, thank you so much for making time for us.
Thanks for having me.
That was our chat with Mike Ruzzioni yesterday. He mentioned his familiarity with President Trump and is actually at the president's rally in Vegas today.